Hey, Bill Nye, the science guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
Say I'm a sound scientist, came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
Hi, this is Todd Stiefel. Welcome to The Humanist Hour.
And this is Jess Constantine, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour, which is the audio podcast of the American Humanist Association.
Humanism is the life stance of striving to be good without God.
So, Todd, we have a great show for our listeners today. We have our guest, Hemet Mehta, who is a pretty well-known atheist blogger, author of a book, I Sold My Soul on eBay, and also a public school math teacher. And so he's going to talk about a whole bunch of different things. And he's also going to give us a couple public speaking tips, which I personally thoroughly enjoyed that part of our interview. But before we get to that, why don't you fill our listeners in on what's been going on in the humanist movement?
The Appignani Humanist Legal Center had a big victory on behalf of the United Coalition of Reason recently. And essentially, what was going on is the Central Arkansas Transit Authority had denied and refused to post ads for United Corps, which said something along the lines of, "Are you good without God? Millions are." And then it sent the link to centralarkansascorps.org, Corps being C-O-R. And so they were discriminating us specifically because we were atheists, and in part because they were afraid of vandalism and the like.
So the Appignani Humanist Legal Center stepped in and took the case to court, where the ruling was in our favor. They found that indeed it was a discrimination or a double standard to run religious ads and to not run non-religious ads. And so it worked in our favor, which is nice to see. And this is great news, but I think that there is a little bit of a catch, Todd. What's that?
There is a little bit of a catch. Not too bad, but a catch nonetheless. So they're making us, and the judge still said this is okay, they're making United Corps put down a $15,000 deposit to protect the Transit Authority in the event of vandalism. Now, in order for United Corps to not get the money back, so in other words, they're pretty much going to get the money back by default, but in order for them to not get it back, CATA would have to prove that the vandalism occurred, that it was because of it being an atheist advertisement, and they would actually have to go through a full trial and win it, which might not be worth their efforts, but maybe it would be, depending on the extent. So they probably won't get their money back, but yet there still is this section in here where we have to put down $15,000 deposit and not get the interest on that, assumably. And there's a chance we won't get it back, which is not something that Christian advertisers have to do. Now they're saying, well, you know, there's a more legitimate chance of vandalism here because there's a track record of vandalism occurring to United Corps ads in other cities. And so therefore it's justified. But I mean, I have some pretty serious concerns about that. I mean, what are your thoughts, Jess?
But it's also saying that you have to be able to afford the $15,000
absolutely
deposit to be able to to me, it reminds me of, you know, okay, so it's legal now for African Americans to vote, but you also have to own property and be able to read.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's you don't want to put in these extra standards that are unnecessary.
But I mean, I don't want to take away, obviously, from this is a great victory on behalf of the Appignani Humanist Legal Center. And I definitely want to take a moment to celebrate that. I mean, they're setting an awesome legal precedent for humanists and atheists and for our ad campaigns and for the United Corps. So hopefully that will make other local governments think twice before first denying the local United Corps the rights to display these ads or run these ads, and then realizing that if you try to take this to court, you're going to spend a lot of money and you're probably going to lose.
Yeah, very, very good news. I like good news.
Well, I'm happy to report, Todd, that I have some more good news for you. So several months ago, we had Justin Griffith on our show, and he spoke about his experience as an atheist in the United States Army. And he also talked about an event that he was attempting to to facilitate called Rock Beyond Belief, which would be a day of, you know, music and speakers and just sort of getting the word out about atheism and providing support for other atheists who are in the military who might not know of, you know, who might not know that they're not alone. And so the Army told Justin that were he to throw an event for his belief or non-belief, that they would provide the same support that they did for a religious event. So they would provide the same facility, the same space, and also financial support. And what Justin found was that Colonel Szyszynski of the Army went back on his word and would not provide the same space or the same financial support. And it had something to do with logistics of how many people he could promise would attend or something like that. But the good news is that recently the Army has once again, and this is after the hard work of Justin Griffith and lots of secular military atheist organizations, the Army has once again promised that they would provide that same location and some financial support to make Rock Beyond Belief happen. So Saturday, March 31st, from noon to 8 p.m., in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, you can now attend Rock Beyond Belief, which is going to be a day of entertainment and education and fun and music and speakers for the rest of us. How awesome is that, Todd?
Yeah, they are really making better attempts now to be fair, because they did provide financial support to the other side. We're not asking for Fort Bragg to do something different for us and pay everything and do something special. We're asking for equal treatment. And with some help from our friends, with some help from the ACLU North Carolina, with some help from Americans United, Military Religious Freedom Foundation, a whole lot of different groups have kind of rallied around this cause and put in some effort. And you know what? The military is changing their tune and looking like they're going to start giving some at least equal access on this side of the many debates in terms of religion in the military. So it's great news. It's a great victory. We're going to have a hell of a lot of fun that day.
Yeah.
So anybody anywhere nearby or from far off that wants to come and hear some awesome speakers, hear some great music. The lineup is fantastic. I got Dan Barker, Richard Dawkins, Margaret Downey, Jen McCrate, Dan McCowan, Hammond Mehta, for example.
Interesting.
I've heard of this guy from somewhere, and some other great speakers. So it's and some cool musicians like Roy Zimmerman, and so it should be really fun.
Nice. And that's not all that we have coming up. There's another. There's several events, but one in particular that we are excited about. The AHA is co-sponsoring the Reason Rally, which is happening in Washington D.C. on March 24th. So that's just the prior Saturday in D.C. Talk a little bit about that, Todd, because, well, you'll be speaking at it.
Yeah, this is kind of unprecedented in terms of the amount of coordination, cooperation, and scale of this event. We're talking about like over a dozen of the top national organizations all coming together, supporting a major event in Washington, D.C. This thing is going to be on the Washington Mall in D.C. and it's just going to be a huge rally and celebration, really. Again, featuring some awesome speakers, like Richard Dawkins and Hammond again, and P.Z. Myers and James Randi. Jamila Bay will be speaking, and she's awesome and hilarious, and Greta Christina. So the list is fantastic of speakers, but they're also working on some really strong musical acts, which will be getting announced in the not too distant future. So we will keep our listeners posted, but there's a lot of work behind the scenes going on to get some really big musical acts, national recognition in there to bring out more crowds and make it even more fun. And somebody else I should mention, our very own Roy Speckart, the executive director of the American Humanist Association, also be speaking. So it's going to be really cool and historic for our movement.
This is going to be the largest secular event ever.
Yeah, that's the plan. And so I will be there, and hopefully as many of our listeners as possible will take the time. Put it on your calendar now, folks. Pencil it in, get to DC, and let's make this a big deal. Let's make our presence known, and let's get the attention of some of those folks on Capitol Hill, that there's some constituents out there that they might not be paying enough attention to.
Don't pencil it in. Sharpie it in.
Sharpie it in.
Make it happen. So, Todd, I noticed that you mentioned this month's guest, Mr. Hemant Mehta.
Yeah, he'll be speaking at both Rock Beyond Belief and the Reason Rally. So he will have a busy end of March 2012. And yeah, Hemant's a great... I count him as a friend and one of my favorite people in the movement. He is a sterling activist, been very busy and active as an activist, if you will, in the movement. He has a book out. He has an extremely popular website, Friendly Atheist, which is at pathos.com. He is the board president of Foundation Beyond Belief. He's been active in the Secular Student Alliance and the Secular Coalition for America. He's been all over the place the last couple of years, and he's a really cool guy, and he's friendly.
So here's a clip of Todd and I speaking with Hemant over Skype.
So Hemant, welcome to the Humanist Hour. How have you been?
I'm great. Thank you guys for having me.
Hemant, thank you so much for being on the Humanist Hour. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar either with your book, I Sold My Soul on eBay, where you wrote about your experience visiting various Christian churches as a result of selling your soul or auctioning your soul on eBay. And also, you're a very prominent atheist blogger. The name of your blog is The Friendly Atheist. And we syndicate some of your entries in our weekly Humanist Network news. And I know that Todd and I love your blog as well. So I know that you wear a lot of different hats in the atheist and humanist movement, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about what else do you do and what's going on?
I've been working a lot more with this group called Foundation Beyond Belief, which is an awesome charity organization where we kind of corral secular donors into giving money to a variety of charities that are going to really good causes. They're secular charities. And we give people the option of which charity they want to donate to, kind of a way to make people excited about giving. So that's one group I've been working with. We've been actually on my website raising money for a lot of really cool causes and kind of harnessing people's willingness to give and help people out. That's been exciting too. And, you know, I've been doing a lot more talks about like math education, which I'm personally passionate about. So, you know, a lot of different things that are very different from selling my soul on eBay or, you know, just things that we often talk about in the movement in general.
I have heard your name pronounced about 30 different ways.
I have too. That was just today.
So I would like, my question is, and I know the answer to the first part, I think, but my question is twofold. First, what is the correct pronunciation of your name, and what's the funniest mispronunciation you've ever heard?
Oh man, I don't even know anymore. My mom says Hemant. Hemant is what I always go by. The funniest mispronunciations? Helmet. Someone once left a message. This was back when the eBay thing was going on. Someone left a message at the Secular Student Alliance headquarters, directed to a Hemant Mehta, which is so far from it that one of our board members turned it into a remixed song with that being the chorus, which I wish I could make my ringtone somehow. Those are the weird ones. I have a lot of students that can't get Mehta right either. So they'll just say, hey, Mr. just fade away in the distance.
Mr. M.
Yeah.
You ever get anybody calling you He-Mant?
I had one teacher for years call me He-Man-T.
That's such a combination of two of the best.
Yeah. Frankly, if they get anywhere close, I'm thrilled.
What I would love to hear is if you could call our listener comment line and just say your name and we can hear how Google translates it.
Oh, man. That would be fun. I will do that.
Could you do that?
I'll give it a call after we're done here.
Nice. And I definitely want to get to talking about some of your education stuff, your education talks and working with children and things like that later. But first, can you maybe give our listeners, just in case they haven't yet read your blog, The Friendly Atheist, can you give them just a little bit of background about, you know, what it is, how long you've been doing it, and maybe where you got the name from?
Yeah. It started out as, you know, the name is Friendly Atheist because you keep hearing all these people talk about angry atheists, militant atheists, staunch atheists. Never anything nice. You never see, like, happy, smiling atheists. So that's where I got the name from. But, you know, in the past few years, it's given me a chance to talk about, you know, here's some issues that are important to me. Here's what's going on in the atheist world, or whatever label you want to use there. But there's been the things I'm really excited about are those out campaign sort of things. I love talking about the billboards that are out there because there's so many of them. I love talking about, you know, how religion gets into pop culture, sports especially. And it's a chance for people to maybe have a discussion that they may not find anywhere else. There's been a lot of guest posts lately because some people who may not have a big forum to voice their opinions, they might send something along my way. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to publish some of these awesome pieces that they're writing about, you know, how to get more African Americans involved in our movement, or, you know, why are we not addressing the needs of parents in our movement? And, you know, I have these really intelligent people who are talking about this stuff, and I can give them a platform to talk about that.
Nice.
Now, you recently moved Friendly Atheist to a new URL and new organization. Yeah. How's that going?
It's going great. So the friendlyatheist.com website that I used to have is now under the umbrella of Patheos, which is kind of like an umbrella website for different religious views. And I know that sounds kind of weird there for an atheist to be joining there. But basically what Patheos wants to do is to say, look, you want to learn about Judaism? We have the facts about it. We have scholarly articles about, you know, issues in Judaism. And we have bloggers who are from that perspective who can voice their opinions on different things. And they do that for evangelical Christians. They do it for Hindus, even pagans. And recently they decided they wanted to jump into the atheist venue. So I'm one of their atheist bloggers, basically doing everything I was before, just under their label. But it's been a fantastic move. They've been very supportive. They don't censor me at all. I can write whatever I want to. So it's a great working relationship so far.
I'm just looking at patheos.com right now, and there's this little comparing religions chart. It's sort of like one of those ad slide things, and it's got the little happy humanist up there. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I hope, you know, if it gets more people looking at atheism or about atheism who wouldn't normally do it, that's fantastic. And I think they're going to be adding more bloggers and more information about atheism as time goes on. And humanism, they haven't done it a lot yet because it's in the working stages. It's still a work in progress, but it's going to get there.
Right.
Now, I will say to our viewers that your blog is my favorite of the blogs. I actually RSS it and put it on my main homepage, and it's the only one on there. So it's a great source of information just to stay up to date. Oh,
thank you. I appreciate that. And that means a lot.
Now, you named it Friendly Atheist to begin with. Do you still consider yourself a friendly atheist?
Yeah.
And has that changed at all over time?
I think it has. You know, I think I was much more willing to hear like what Christians had to say. And it's not that I'm not anymore, but it gets to the point when you've been doing this for a little while that you kind of hear the same stuff over and over. And even the moderate Christians or the liberal Christians end up saying the same types of things over and over, and they don't quite get to the point that you're satisfied with. So, you know, it's gotten to the point where I would have been bending over backwards to hear what liberal Christians had to say and giving them credit for it. And now I find myself saying, look at what this liberal Christian said. It's not good enough. And we need to go after that. And we need to critique that. And so, I mean, look, I still think I'm friendly, but I think I'm much more able now to just say, look, this is wrong. I don't care who's saying it. I'm not trying to be accommodating to people who are somewhat religious, but still have nonsensical views. At some point, I don't think I would have cared because these people might have been on our side when it comes to civil rights for gay people and abortion and those big social issues. They might have been on our side with that, but they were still religious and I was willing to let that slide. I think now I'm not as comfortable with letting them slide on that. And if, you know, some people might say that makes me unfriendly because of the way I might call that out. I don't know. I think it's fair. I think it's fair to criticize that.
Well, would you not want to work with them because they're Christians?
This is an issue that we talked about with Foundation Beyond Belief, because one of the categories that we give our members the option of donating to is a charity that may be run by religious people, but they're not proselytizing in any sort of way. So these may be Buddhists who are doing some really amazing things in some part of the world. And we think it's a worthwhile cause, but they're Buddhists. Do you want to support them? And, you know, we think that by giving people the option of doing it, it's all right. If some people just don't want to support religious people in any sort of way like that, they don't have to. But there are a lot of people who might say, you know what, I don't care if it's a Christian or a Hindu person doing this thing. What I care about is what they're doing, their actions. And I like this action, so I want to support it. And I think there are a lot of times when that sort of interfaith organization can work really well. I mean, I really do support the idea of working with religious people toward common goals, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't stop criticizing them when their beliefs make no sense. And a lot of times their actual religious beliefs don't.
How often do their religious beliefs make sense?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
I think that's a really fair point and a good point, something important to our movement as a whole right now, because I think that I agree with you in that I think it's important when the subject is at hand for us to not let slide things that don't make sense or dangerous or illogical.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we have to have every conversation about it. And it doesn't mean we can't be friends with or work with Christians.
Exactly.
You know, we can get along and get together just fine. But if they want to talk religion, we should say, well, okay, you know, well, you're a Christian, so I won't have any comment on that. Or, hey, we don't have to have that. We can be friends and not have the conversation. But if we're going to have the conversation, I'm not going to hold back.
Right. We don't need to agree on everything. In fact, this is one of the points of contention with a lot of atheist student groups. You know, I've worked with the Secular Student Alliance for years, and we've seen a lot of our student groups hold joint events with religious groups on their campus because it's more interesting when you have people who disagree with you, but they want to have that discussion because we all want to have that discussion. It's fun. It's a good debate to have. And we've seen a lot of our groups do things like going down to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina hit with a Christian group and work together because everyone wanted to help the people down there and religious views. It didn't matter. You wanted to go down there and help out. But at the same time, you know, a lot of the interfaith community seems to think those religious beliefs don't matter or they want to strengthen people's faiths. And that's not what we want to see. And I think the time when you have backlash from our side anyway is when we feel like we're being muzzled, when we can't criticize religious people for any sort of reason. And sometimes you get that sort of vibe from the interfaith community that religions or your faith is something to be cherished, that faith is a virtue, and it's not. And sometimes atheists feel like you can't get a word in when it comes to criticizing their religion, even though there are a lot of common goals that we all share.
I think it's more productive, obviously, to be able to put aside your differences in order for bettering the common good, you know, for doing the volunteer work, for having the blood drive, for doing all that stuff. The thing that I get caught up on is criticizing, I guess the word criticizing. Like debating is one thing to me and criticizing is another. So maybe that's the line between when you stop being friendly and when you are being friendly and if it matters. I mean, it's just...
Well, I mean, I'll give you the time that this came most in contention, I guess. Last year, there was a debate over whether you should be able to draw an image of Muhammad. And, you know, I don't think... there were about 3 or 4 atheist groups on college campuses who actually chalked their ground with stick figure, smiling images, stick figures, and they labeled it Muhammad. I don't find that offensive, but it's illegal basically in Islam to draw an image of Muhammad. Now, you can have a conversation about that. And I think that's an important conversation to have. Where do you draw the line? What constitutes a drawing of Muhammad? And some of our groups tried to reach out to those Muslim groups on campus and said, look, this is what we want to do. This is why we're doing it. We want to have a conversation with you guys about it. So let's have that conversation. But it's hard to do it when some people just feel that it's just a slap in the face to them. It's a very delicate line there.
Yeah.
I love how some of them ended up with boxing gloves on the stick figures. And it said they changed it to say Muhammad Ali, like random people around campus.
Yeah, and then some of the atheist groups came back and just said, well, what if we draw a stick figure and say M-U-H dash 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 or something like that? It's like, well, does that count? What if it's just like two eyeball slits and a smiley face and that's it? It's like, well, does that count? Like, at what point do you say this is all absurd and, you know, we should just stop arguing about this?
What's the fine line between where it's funny and where you should be killed?
Yeah, exactly. And again, that's an important conversation to have. But the interfaith community, the Interfaith Youth Corps, they actually put out a statement that called what the atheists were doing like equivalent to a hate crime for drawing happy, smiling stick figures. You know, at some point here, it's kind of annoying to say that, you know, you don't really want to be part of an interfaith community that censors that sort of drawing. At the same time, there's a lot of good things that interfaith groups, including humanists, are doing. So I don't want to denigrate all that good stuff that they're doing, too.
In the years that you've been blogging, Hemet, do you have a favorite post or maybe a most popular or most controversial?
Wow.
You can take some time to think about it. That's okay.
Yeah, I would need to. You know, it's weird because it's not like any one post gets hits over and over and over again. Like, it's not like anyone's going to a post from 2007 and all of a sudden gets popular again. But there are certain topics that seem to get more attention from other sources. Anytime it's someone outside the atheist movement talks about it, I think that's always a good sign. I think the one, at least in the past year or two, the two stories that have gotten the most attention, one was when I heard about Damon Fowler, who is this high school senior who basically told his principal, look, I know you guys are going to pray during graduation and this is a public school. We shouldn't be doing that. So I'm going to contact the ACLU if you go through with it. But, you know, can you put a stop to it before it happens? And they basically dismissed him. So he followed through. He got support from other people. And actually, I'm sorry if I'm misstating the story. They actually went through with a prayer. They did a pre-graduation, like a practice ceremony. They did a prayer during that. At the actual graduation, another prayer was said. At one point, they put Damon at the very end of the line of kids getting their diplomas. It was That's ridiculous. Crazy. Even one of his teachers called him out saying, you know, why is he complaining? Like, he hasn't contributed anything to this class.
Are you serious?
It was ridiculous. And so, you know, the people at my website, we raised over $30,000 for a college scholarship for Damon. I was just amazed at the outpouring of support there. So that's one thing that got a lot of attention beyond just our community, I guess. And the other story that really got a lot of attention a couple months ago was, you know, I heard there were churches in Bend, Oregon. They got vandalized, and they got vandalized with they were tagged with graffiti that said things like the Flying Spaghetti Monster, FSM. And I'm like, you know, usually the people who joke about the Flying Spaghetti Monster are other atheists. And I would hate to think that any group of atheists vandalized any church, you know, just to make a joke, just to make a point. I don't know what that point would be. But before we found out who did it, I asked my readers if they would consider raising money to help pay for the vandalism. Not because we did it, but because, you know, this isn't the sort of dialogue we want to have. And whoever did it doesn't represent the humanist community at large. And so we raised a few thousand dollars really quickly. And when I was finally able to get in touch with the church leaders there, both of them said basically, look, we really appreciate the support. They were very surprised. But they said we were able to clean it up and no real damage was done. So the money was donated to Foundation Beyond Belief. But it got to the point where there were a lot of stories written about it. And myself and one of the pastors of those churches appeared on Fox Nice. News. And it was just one of those feel-good stories. Like, look, neither of us want to see that type of dialogue happening. That doesn't prove anything. And I certainly don't support what those vandals did. And I think a lot of people agreed with me on that. So I think that's the sort of thing we would hope any Christian group did if one of our billboards were vandalized. I haven't seen that happen yet, but I think that would be a nice gesture.
Yeah. You've talked about Foundation Beyond Belief a couple of times. what's next for FBB, if you will? What are the latest, greatest things that, you know, our listeners should know?
Sure. Well, we've raised, you know, I think $175,000 since we first opened shop back at the beginning of 2010. And that's unbelievable. It's very exciting that month, every quarter when we pick new charities, they know they can expect a certain level of support from our community. So that's really exciting. The next thing we're going to be doing that's really big is now we're going to take this into make it into something tangible. We're going to put people on the ground. So we're organizing a group called Volunteers Beyond Belief. And these will hopefully start off at least being local communities that we could pull together to do volunteer work in the area if something needs to be done or if we can do anything to make, you know, the community a better place. Whether that's, you know, a blood drive where we need support there or, you know, hey, if there was something like a church that got vandalized and we needed people to get over there and help them clean it up, maybe we could gather them really quickly. So it's starting in a few communities and hopefully it'll become a bigger thing where we'll have little groups of volunteers all over the country that we could bring together for bigger causes.
That's awesome. I see you have already 8 teams active.
That's right. We're going to test those 8 out and hopefully I think we're going to add 8 more before the end of the year. But we want to see how they go, give it like a little trial run, see how it goes, learn from our mistakes and then make it bigger.
In regards to, you know, interfaith and working with other groups, which we've talked about a little bit, what is your relationship like now, if any, with the people who did buy your soul on eBay?
You know, I'm still in occasional contact with Jim Henderson, who was the pastor who initially bought my time and told me to go to certain churches. We're like friends on Twitter. We follow each other there. But it's just gotten to the point where he's busy doing his thing and I'm busy with mine. But there's certainly no like love lost there. We're both very supportive, I think, of what the other is trying to do. And in fact, you know, I've seen a lot of Christian communities. I live in Chicago. I've actually had a couple Christian groups in Chicago, like youth groups, say, you know, we know as Christians, sometimes we can get isolated and in our own bubble. We want to learn more about what other people are thinking, what they're saying about us, and what we can do better as Christians. So they've actually a couple times invited me to speak to their groups about my perspectives, what I think of when I think of the word Christian, what I've noticed when I visited their churches. And they've done the same thing with I know one group in Chicago that had a Muslim talk to them about, you know, how does Christianity appear to a Muslim? Is it good or bad? And what can Christians do better? They've also had a gay person speak to that same group, you know, and I'm referring to only one because I know it the best, but there are other groups out there that are saying, we want to hear what atheists have to say about us. Not really because of the debate that we could have about religion, but because we ought to know what other people are going through, why they think what they think, instead of just demonizing them from afar.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour with this month's guest, Mr. Hemet Mehta. As promised, we have Hemet's voicemail to us, followed by Google's garble of his message.
Hi, Todd and Jeff. This is Hemet Mehta. Now let's see how they garble that up.
Hi, Todd. In jest, this is Hammond's Matt. Now it's inevitable that out. So we were talking before we started the interview that you're a math instructor.
Yeah.
I think that you're in kind of a neat position, you know, talking to kids. How does your worldview ever sort of come into play with your education, or does it ever do that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it's not like I'm walking into my math classroom and saying, you know, this is the letter I. It's imaginary, just like God.
Right.
Like, I'm not doing that. But you know, math is all about thinking logically. And really, I mean, isn't that what we want to teach people to do? Think critically, think logically, explain their way through a problem. And that's I think that's something all of us, you know, regardless of whatever label we want to use, we all have that in common. So, I mean, teaching kids proofs in geometry, it's not like it's a secret underhanded tactic to make kids become atheists or something, but it is teaching them how to think critically. And I hope that they can take away more from that than just, oh, this is some stuff we had to do in math class and I did it to pass a test. I hope that's not all they're taking from it.
Right.
Well, that sounds all good in theory, but I think it'd just be a lot easier if we teach them all to agree with me.
Yes. And, well, and you know, what's annoying, and this is something that I think a lot of educators could say, is that, you know, as much as I want to teach that critical thinking, it's not happening because a lot of, you know, a lot of the tests that these students have to take are all about not thinking critically. It's about knowing which bubble to fill in on a test, knowing the tricks that the test makers are using. It's kind of frustrating because the really cool things about math and the really cool books that you can read in English, those aren't the ones being tested on. And a lot of schools, they make you kind of push the real stuff aside so you can do whatever you need to get those scores higher.
Right. It seems like there's sort of a paradox of the stuff that you learn when you're becoming a teacher about like the sort of higher level of learning, like thinking critically and applying things that you're learning, you know, throughout your life, and the stuff that you do on the day to day as a teacher, like teaching kids how to take a test so that they can pass right. and get into a school and so that you can keep your job like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And even beyond keeping my job, I mean, there is some importance to knowing how to take a sure. test, but you know, I know this blogger named Dan Meyer, who's just a brilliant math blogger, and he put it this way, and I love the way he phrased it. He said, if kids are asking you in class, when are we ever going to do this in life, they're really not concerned about their future. They're just bored with the present.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the hardest things to do as a teacher is to get kids to understand how a lot of the stuff that they're learning, it's not just to pass a test. There's some really cool applications for a lot of this math and a lot of the physics that they're using. But it's kind of hard to get into some of that because you need a little time to do it. You need to get kids to think beyond a test. And some teachers and some schools don't really give you that flexibility. I'm fortunate enough that I think I have a little more of that flexibility where I teach, and it is a public school. But that's always a challenge. It's how do you get kids to get really interested in the subject? And it's one of the things that keeps me going as a teacher to see how much fun I can make the subject.
What tricks do you have to get kids really excited about math? I mean, that can't be an easy task.
It's finding problems that are relevant to them. It's giving them the flexibility to get credit for creating their own problems with regards to whatever we're talking about. It's a variety of things like that. It's bringing in real life. You know, it's things like carrying a phone with me wherever I go so I can take a picture of math. Because every teacher you've ever had for math always says math is all around you. It's in real life. And if you're a student, it's kind of hard to believe them because they just always say that. But, you know, when you're carrying a camera, it's easy to say, like, look, I see this parabola and I think we could do something with it. Or I see these kids playing basketball, and we could decide, you know, based off of just a couple pictures of where the ball is in space, whether that ball is going to land in the basket. I mean, just things like that, that look, this stuff that we're doing, it's not just for fun and games. There's an application we could have with this.
Now, I've heard that sometimes you can take a three-dimensional shape and unfold it into a two-dimensional shape, and sometimes that results in an unfortunate double entendre.
That's right. That happened once where, you know, I had those shapes. I have these three-dimensional shapes, and we're trying to show kids how to calculate surface area. And the idea is, look, here's a pyramid, which has a square on the bottom and maybe four triangles on the side. And if you unwrap it, kind of make it two-dimensional, you could see the square in the middle and the four triangles. When you try to do the same thing with a cylinder around high school boys, it doesn't quite work the same way. I think at my school, the way we decided to fix that is we ripped off one of the circles and put it on the other end. So,
that's awesome.
Just to avoid that awkwardness. But
good call on him.
But it got the point across.
They'll remember that lesson, though.
Yeah, they will. So has your worldview ever, have you ever had to defend it with, you know, any of your instructors, bosses, or kids' parents, or is that something that you're able to keep private? And
it is. I mean, look, I'm sure kids can find out about me if they wanted to. And if they ask about it in the classroom, I don't. I shut them down. I mean, that's not a discussion that I should be having in school. It's not one that I want to have in school. So you know what? It really doesn't. People are almost surprised when I've said that, but kids don't ask me about the atheism stuff when I'm in class because they're concerned with far more important things to them.
Right.
And I'm not going to talk about it even if they wanted to. you know, there was a religious right group in Illinois that tried to get parents to take their kids out of my classroom because I was an atheist. And thankfully, no one, not a single person, asked my boss to make that happen. But even if they did, I don't think that would have happened because they have no legitimate problem with me as a math teacher. No parents have ever complained about what I do on the side, even if they knew. I've actually gotten a couple compliments from parents who say, I like your website.
Nice.
And my response is, I don't care. I'm here to talk about your child. So you almost have to tone it down with them, too. But for the most part, no, I've never had to defend it because no one really brings it up. And if they do, I'm the first one to shut it down.
Right. That's good. Well,
that still must have been a scary experience having, you know, a group try to organize to have people pulled out of your class.
Yeah, and I had to talk to my administrators about that. They wanted to talk to me about it, not because they were concerned that I was like proselytizing atheism in the classroom, but they were concerned that here was a religious right group going after a public school teacher, and we all know that sort of story makes the news all the time. And they wanted to know, you know, look, if this makes the news, how are we going to handle it? And they wanted me to be included in that discussion. But they made it very clear that they know, they've seen me in class. They observe me often. And they know that I'm not there to preach whatever it is I believe. I'm there to teach math, and they know I do a good job of it. So they made it very clear that my job is not in jeopardy, regardless of what this group writes, regardless of any parents that call. But they wanted to have a plan B, just in case any parents started to complain. What would they do about it? So, you know, I appreciate that. I think that was the right way to handle it. And they know what the law is. I know what the law is. So there was no issue.
Right. I mean, I guess if you think about it, it's like if any other teacher were a blogger, you would expect that they wouldn't talk about what they blog about in their classroom.
Right. Exactly. And it's rare, I guess, for people with blogs to talk about something that's so deep and personal to a lot of people and basically like stomp all over that.
Right.
So I can understand how some people might be concerned about things I'm writing. But again, it's not something I'm preaching in the classroom.
Right.
I'm talking about something that is very different.
If you were education czar,
yeah,
what would you change about the American education system?
Oh, man, where do I begin? You know, there are a couple
things. You get one thing, okay? You're just the czar for a little while.
In a tweet, what would I change about education? Yeah. Well, you know, there's a couple things. I remember, you know, how I got into teaching is I was planning to go to medical school. I actually went for a year, and I realized this isn't for me. So I took some time off, and that's when I got certified to teach. But the process from going to someone who was at least, you know, qualified enough to get into med school to trying to become a high school, public school math teacher, you know, to take all the classes that I had to take, there are some classes that are worthwhile to take when you're trying to become a teacher. Student teaching is amazing. That's a great learning experience. But it's so hard to get people to get, I mean, there are a lot of qualified, intelligent, educated people who can't get into a classroom because apparently they're lacking the right credentials. You know what I mean? And there are people who probably aren't as, you know, and I'm not knocking teachers, but there are teachers who don't know their content who can go through an education certification program and they're in the classroom. I wish it was easier for people to get into the classroom if they're qualified and they know what they're doing. That's one thing. I wish there was less of an emphasis on testing, but I know it is important to everyone to know that teachers are doing what they're supposed to do. And that means instead of testing these kids and basing every decision off of what those tests do, it means, you know, principals have to make sure their staffs are doing good jobs. That means observing them more in the classroom and seeing how they're doing and what they can do to make it better and giving them advice and seeing if they're taking the advice. I mean, it's things that happen in so many other businesses. And for some reason, we're not doing it ourselves. You know, I think I keep hearing like Finland is this great education system, and I've never been there, so this is all secondhand information for me. But they basically pick the best and brightest people to become teachers, and most people cannot do it. Most people get rejected from becoming a teacher. They have unions, but these people are qualified to do it. They're observed, they're constantly assessed as teachers, and they do a good job, and no wonder their kids are doing better because of it.
I think you might have gone over the tweet character limit there, but
right. That's a long tweet. We'll just condense it.
Can we bit.ly? Right. Can we bit.ly that?
Yeah.
We'll have to banish him to Finland.
What's next for you, Hemet? What's on your horizon?
It's a good question. I'm kind of stooped so much in the school I'm working at right now because I coach forensics, like speech team, and that basically takes up my entire winter. And I'm actually trying to become a nationally board certified teacher, which is a 1 year or more long process. That's kind of one of those, it signals if you earn it, that you're one of the most qualified teachers out there. And I'd like to get that. But that's a long process that I'm just beginning right now. So in terms of the atheism stuff, I mean, I'll keep the blog going. I'm still speaking at a lot of places. And if anyone's college would like to bring me there, if their Secular Student Alliance group would like to bring me, let the SSA know and we'll work at something out, or just email me. Hopefully I can speak in the fall and the spring, and then the winter's all competing with forensics.
So first of all, congratulations and good luck on becoming nationally board certified. And, the second thing is you said you're coaching forensic speaking. What exactly is that?
Yeah, sure. In Illinois, it changes in every state, but in Illinois, there's 14 different events, kind of like track and field. And it ranges anywhere from acting by yourself or acting with a partner to reading a story in front of a group of people to the events I did, which was, hey, you have 2 minutes to think about, I'm going to throw a subject at you, like a camera. You have 2 minutes to think about it, and then you got to give a 6-minute speech in front of a group of people about it. And it's all these 14 different speaking events that are all over the place. And each event has its own kind of subculture and rules and tactics and strategies. And, we're trying to make students better public speakers no matter what they're doing. So I'm the head coach at our school. We have like 60 or 70 kids each year on our team. Definitely one of the most competitive programs in the state. So we've had some really great people graduate from that program. I mean, some of our graduates that were on speech over the past couple of years have gone on to like Harvard, accepted at Yale, just gone on to really awesome things. And I haven't been around long enough to see what they're doing, after they leave college. Cause since I've been teaching, they're still in college.
Right.
But, some of the most talented kids you'll ever meet do that sort of
thing.
That's
awesome. Can you give Todd and I like a 1-minute coaching session on public speaking forensically? Is that right? And then can you give us a question to do that you might see in one of your events or competitions?
Well, in terms of the question,
you
got to
coach us first.
Yeah, you can't just give us the question. No. That's not cool at all.
Here's the thing. Here's another event. There's an event about current events called extemporaneous speaking. That's one that's around most
states.
I'm going
to fail this one, Todd.
They'll toss out a question like, who will be the Republican nominee for president in 2012? Okay, so we get the question, but these students will kind of look through their... The goal is you have 45 minutes by Illinois rules to research this using maybe files you've collected and come up with a speech. So if you want advice on how to do that sort of thing, really, if you know your current events well enough, I would hope you at least have an answer somewhere in the back of your head. And if you can come up with an outline, I think this person is going to be the nominee for these reasons. Or I think, this person is going to be the nominee. Let's go with that. This person is going to be the nominee for 3 reasons. Here's what I think those reasons are. Maybe you're not sure what a good second or third reason would be. Now you start looking through your files to figure out what are arguments that other pundits have made that I could use in my speech here. But if you can come up with that outline, and then you could find ways to justify what you're saying. I know that's backwards from how we normally do things, but this is the strategy there. And then if you can find some sort of hook, I love it when I've seen kids talk about the economy. They'll get a question about the economy and it's really complicated. They're trying to explain the debt ceiling or something. But the way they grab you in when they start talking, and this works in anything you do, the way they grab you in is they start talking about, the time when they were a babysitter. Or the time when their parents gave them their first credit card. And they just do this in a way that's so relatable and it's so enjoyable to listen to. Then somehow they find a way to connect it to this larger topic that's really what the speech is all about. But once they give you that hook that makes you really want to listen to them, they can talk about the thing they want to talk about. And everyone's listening to them and hanging on every word. And that's just good advice no matter what speech you're giving. I remember writing essays like that in high school. If I want to prove like why this poetry, what's the symbolism here, I might relate it to something else, or writing a history essay, trying to relate it to something else to draw people in and then make my point. If you want a really quick public speaking tip, one of the most annoying things that you will ever hear is how some people, they talk like this and they end their sentences on an upbeat, like they're asking a question, and it makes them sound so unconfident, and it's so annoying. And you have to, like, you want to beat that out of them somehow. And so that's one of the hardest things to do, because people are so used to talking that way that you just, all you want to say is, look, if you just end every sentence on a downbeat like this, it makes you sound more confident and people are going to listen to you. When you end it a little up like this, makes you seem like you're unsure of yourself and no one knows what you're, if no one's going to take you seriously.
You're questioning yourself.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you're not sure about it, why should I take you seriously?
I don't know.
Yes, exactly.
That's a good tip. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny because you have a lot of young, we have a lot of freshmen and sophomores in high school who have these ticks, these, the things like that uptick at the end of their talks, or using gestures that aren't very effective that we have to get out of their system. And then with the older kids, we're trying to hone their skills so that they're really, really good at all of their events. So, I mean, it's, there's a reason it's very competitive. It's like those Toastmaster things or even a good TED talk.
So Hemant, what makes that, what about that is forensic? Where does that come from? That title?
You know, I don't know what the definition of forensics is. We actually just call it speech team, and it's called individual events because these are all ones you do on your own. But if you nationally, when they do this sort of thing, it's called the National Forensics League that hosts a lot of the tournaments and whatnot. So I'm not sure where the origin of that word is coming from, but that's the gist of that.
That's cool. It's the NFL. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, we made that joke. And how so unlike the NFL it is. There's one thing speech kids cannot do, it's play football.
And if there's one thing football players can't do, it's speak publicly.
Yeah, hey, wait a minute. That's not cool.
Did you play football, Todd?
I did play football. Intramural football.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I thought maybe Todd would have a guest, at least that he pulled out of his ass, because he usually does. And because he says it on the downbeat, you believe him.
You believe it, right. Yep.
The word forensics dates back to the early 1900s when people who began this practice were actually forensic experts in murder cases, and on the side began practicing this for the fun and joy of speech. They're all part of the Toastmasters of Houston, Texas.
You know who's really good at public speaking? It's all these pastors of the megachurches.
Absolutely.
They're great.
I download their podcast, not for the religious reasons, but because it's so interesting to listen to what they have. It's interesting to listen to how they get across their message. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I've seen churches. Let me give you an example of something I heard a church pastor do. And then I'm thinking to myself, that's brilliant. I love it. And this pastor had a table. I'm listening to the podcast, but he's describing a table he has in front of him. And he's like, do you all know what this is? This is a car jack. If you got a flat tire on the road, how many of you would know how to use this? And that's all he says. Then he moves on. He's like, this is a fire extinguisher. If there was a fire in your building or your house tonight, how many of you would know how to make this thing work? And there's a little laughter because a lot of people are like, I have no idea how to work either of those things. And then he's like, and this is the Bible. If you need this to save your life, how many of you know how to read this book and use its rules to guide your life or something like that? And I'm like, okay, I don't really buy that whole connection there. But as a rhetorical device there, that was really good. I liked it a lot.
And all you need is a fire extinguisher and a Bible, and you could carjack somebody.
There you go.
Do you talk about the 7%, 38%, 55% rule?
Which one is that? Clearly, I don't.
Well, it's about the message is supposedly 7% of your message is just the words that you're saying. 38% is your tone and inflection. And 55% is your body, body language.
I haven't heard it put that way, but that's one of the things we talk about, because we have students all the time who are great at talking. They know how to speak, but they don't have the content to support mm-hmm. it. And sometimes, and more often probably, it's the other way around, where their speeches are just very strong, backed up by really good citations, but they're not as good as delivering it as some other people. And so one of the battles that we have to do when you're coaching that sort of thing is find a way to make the best of both worlds, or trying to get those kids who are deficient in one area better. Right. So we don't put it in such specific percentages like that, but that idea is definitely in play.
Which is harder to teach, you think, coming up with the content or coming up with the delivery?
Yeah. Delivery, hands down. Yeah. Kids know how to write, and we can teach them how to research. But it's hard to teach someone to have like charisma. And it's hard to teach them to be likable when they're up there, you know? And it's frustrating, because I've had some, there's always good kids. I have great kids on my team right now. But it's so frustrating when you have some of these kids that you've worked with for years and they're so good. And like, if you've ever seen, I know I've met Todd a lot. Jess, I've met you like once or twice. But I'm not an emotional person. And if you've ever seen any of the talks I gave on YouTube, or you just see my website, I really don't cry a lot. I'm not that emotional type of person. But I've had kids on the team that when they talk or when they act out a play, I am like, if not bawling, I'm really close to it. That rarely happens, because they're so good at whatever it is they're trying to communicate. And it's like, oh, now you're graduating and going somewhere else and they get your talents and it's so sad. And now we got to make someone else as good as you were, you know, and that happens all the time when you have athletes or anything.
Any
like
kind
that.
Of coach.
But it's so hard to find those people who are just really charismatic, because you're like, if you know how to speak and you're funny and you're likable, we could teach you how to write. We could teach you how to do research. It's so hard the other way around.
You ever taught one of these sessions to people in the movement? Have you ever gone to like a conference and taught speaking skills?
No, that's a good idea.
Never
have. That's a good idea.
You should. We need more speakers trained. Maybe at a SCA, Secular Coalition for America strategy summit in the future.
Absolutely. Well, I think in a sense, we see that all the time, because anytime you see those YouTube videos that get really popular, it is. Those are the good public speakers in our movement too. I mean, there are people who say brilliant things, but they're kind of reading a monologue and they're very monotone. It's like I'm in grad school again. I'm just bored. I don't care. I'm zoning out. I don't care what you're saying. Yeah, you wish there was a way to, maybe that's not a bad idea. We need to get people to have these public speaking classes.
I like that.
Absolutely. I mean, it helped me. I was fortunate enough to get a lot of executive training in it, to the point that I was able to start training other people on how to speak.
Yeah.
But I had no confidence at first, which is part of it. But you get a little training, get a little experience, and fix the one or two things that are, key to each person's style that might be interfering, and it helps a lot. I was a dancer. I would just move around. I was like this constant, flow of energy and motion.
I know you're absolutely right. And in fact, that's one of the things we try to do on our team. Like our new kids, because they are bad. They don't know what they're doing yet. So we got to teach them. We make all of our older kids teach all the new ones. Like I'm head coach of this team. I probably don't see half the kids on our team on a regular basis. And the reason for that is we let our varsity kids, our older kids, coach them, because they know the basics. They know what they're doing. My coaching staff works entirely with the upperclassmen.
That's awesome.
Because we don't just want them to learn from us. We want them to teach other people how to do it, because that's how they're going to get better too.
Train the trainer, baby.
Exactly.
All right. So awesome. Todd, we got a little lesson, right? We got some of our tips about how to make that outline and how not to end our questions or not end our statement sounding like a question. So Hemant, give us a little exercise here. So,
This is going to be fun. You should give us each one and it can be ridiculous. I don't care who goes first, but
why can't we work together, Todd?
Here's something. Here's one of the events, the one I was mentioning, where you get 2 minutes to think and then you got to give a 6 minute speech.
Uh-huh. Let's go with no time to think and 30 second speech.
The topic is look before you leap. So I want you to get across the message of what that means. Look before you leap. And somehow I want you to connect it to the show Glee. Find a way to explain to me what that quotation means, but I want you to use that show Glee in your explanation.
All right, who's going first? Okay, so the key in life is to look before you leap, which means you need to analyze the situation, get a good idea of what's going on in your surroundings before you move forward. For example, if you were a cheerleader, let's say, in the local Glee Club, and you were going to go out on stage and sing a song for a group, you would like to understand your audience first. You don't want to get up there and be singing something from the latest hip hop album in the out in Eastern Mississippi. The audience might not be into that particular kind of music. While on the other hand, you're probably not going to want to sing the latest country hits if you're in kind of more alternative school in Seattle, let's say. So the key is look before you leap, look around you, understand your surroundings, get a good handle for that. And when you do, you can understand your audience and you can deliver your message better.
That's very good. I like that a lot. All right, Jess, your turn. Talk about the word courage, but work in Sesame Street.
Having the courage, having the ability to take a chance and learn your ABCs, knowing that you might not get all the way to Z, but you're still going to start it. Even if no one else jumps in and starts to sing with you, you're going to keep going. Because you know that the potential of getting to that Z is worth trying. And if you fail, you just start again at A. Because the only way to get to Z is to go through A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K.
This is the way to extend
absolutely.
The time. That's pretty good. And I mean, this is the sort of thing. I mean, now imagine doing that when you're like 14. Yeah. And that's the challenge we're up against. I mean, we're trying to get kids to come up with these in-depth, really complicated speeches. Say it in a way that looks like they know what they're talking about. And they wrote this thing years ago and they've been practicing it ever since. But really, they've only had a couple minutes. Yep. I mean, that's the challenge. It's definitely tough, but it's, you know, I did it in high school. It's probably the most useful activity I could have done for myself.
Yeah. Who won? That's what we want to know.
I think I have to declare it a tie because I'm friendly.
Is that your way of bringing it back full circle as the friendly atheist?
Exactly.
Hemet, thank you so much for speaking with the Humanist Hour. We look forward to having you on our show again.
Thank you so much. I look forward to doing it again.
Thanks, humanity.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Jess.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon, Hemet.
So that was Hemant Mehta, and if you'd like to reach out to him or learn more about what he's doing, you could check him out on Friendly Atheist, which is Patheos, PATHEOS.com/blog/friendlyatheist. You can comment on the site, on the various blog postings, or you can contact him directly by going to the contact page.
All right.
And part of next month's show is going to be a focus on back to school and teenage humanists and atheists.
So listeners, especially those of you who either have teenagers or if you're teenagers yourself, we want to hear from you. So call our listener comment line 202-618-1371 and tell us why you should be on our show. Tell us why we should interview you because we want to know what your experience is like. And that doesn't mean you have to be someone who is super actively involved. You don't have to be a super teenage atheist. We just want to know what your life is like as a teenager and as an atheist in America.
Yeah, we're looking for good human stories. So yeah, please let us know and please be on the show. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Todd, I think that about wraps it up for this month.
Indeed. Well, thank you, Jess. I had a good time as usual.
I agree, Todd. It is always fun to chat with you. And I hope that our listeners enjoy the little back and forth that we have here. So listeners, give us a call. Tell us why you should be on our show. 202-618-1371. 1371. You can find that number also on our website, which is thehumanisthour.org. While you're there, do a couple things. Number one, like us on Facebook. There's a link just under that listener comment line. You can also download and listen to previous episodes.
You can also sign up for Humanist Network News, which is the weekly e-zine of the American Humanist Association. You can find that at AmericanHumanist.org/HNN.
Folks, thank you so much for listening. I'm Jess Constantine.
I am Todd Stiefel.
Have a good one.